Welcome to the Naked Wellness Podcast. As a qualified nutritionist, I'm here to strip away the nonsense and get down to the bare essentials of nutrition and wellness. Join us as we debunk myths, chat with top-notch experts, and serve up practical tips that will leave you feeling empowered. Get ready to uncover the naked truth about living your healthiest life. Let's undress. Welcome back to the Naked Wellness Podcast. Today I have a special guest with me. I have Dr. Jen Huber. Dr. Jen is on a mission to help women thrive in midlife. She helps women manage their menopause, understand what's happening with their hormones, find body confidence, and just live a life with food freedom, which is so incredibly powerful. So welcome, Jen, to the Naked Wellness Podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
It's going to be great. Did you want to tell us, with giving us a little bit of an introductory about yourself, your own journey that you've been on, what got you interested into this field of health that you're in?
Sure. So I have been a dietitian now for almost 25 years. I've been a naturopathic doctor for a little over 20. And so I've really been working in this field of health and wellness for more than two decades. Mm-hmm. And when I started, I was very entrenched in diet culture, hot on the heels of a traditional dietetic program and then an integrative program like naturopathic medicine. I really believed that food was medicine. And I believed it personally, I believed it professionally. And then after about, 10, 12 years of working with people, and also coinciding with my own crash landing into early perimenopause at 37, I could no longer ignore the fact that diets didn't work. Telling people what to eat, trying to tell myself what I should eat, wasn't working, and it wasn't helping anyone improve their health. And I was seeing, not only my own mental and physical health deteriorate with more restrictive plans and dieting and food rules, I was seeing it in the women that I was working with as well. So just about 10 years ago now is when I kind of started my own personal and professional undieting journey to becoming a certified intuitive eating counselor, have fully crossed over the finish line into menopause now. And so really just wanted to help other women understand that they don't need to go on a diet because they've turned 40. I really want them to see that a peaceful and easy and nourishing relationship with food is how you thrive in midlife.
I love that. And especially because when I started to become a nutritionist, like as I was studying and when I first graduated out of that, I worked for Weight Watchers for over 4 years. And I saw a lot of women who were entering that phase of their life who, a lot of them, to be honest, had actually been on Weight Watchers since their teens because their parents had put them on it. But it was this desire to want to regain that control almost, right? Of, well, I don't have control over what my body's doing. So I just maybe have to eat less and less and less, or I have to go on this diet and that's not working, so I'll try something else. And it was really, really sad to see, because it was stopping all of these women from actually living different parts of their life, whether it was the social occasions or, date nights or whatever it was. So I love that you've obviously been through your own journey with recognizing it for you individually, but now you get to empower so many other women in it as well, which is amazing. Did you want to kind of give us a little bit of an overview about menopause and how it actually affects the women's body and the changes and things that women can expect to go through
physically? Yeah, I would love to.
And hormonally?
So, and let's back up a little bit and talk about what I call the ages and stages. And so everything from your first period until, things start to change in perimenopause is, considered premenopause. And I describe it as the time of your life when you're making regular hormone soup. The recipe for hormone soup doesn't change a whole lot. Assuming that you're cycling, things are happening very regularly, very predictably. And even if you're having symptoms like PMS or bloating or headaches, they're happening in a predictable time in your cycle, and you know why they're happening. What happens in perimenopause, which is the period of time of up to 10 years before your final or last menstrual period, is that your ovaries are starting to sputter. And as a result, you're no longer making predictable, reliable hormone soup. And initially in early perimenopause, your cycle may not be changing all that much. It might be coming a little bit earlier, a little bit later, but you're not skipping periods. You're not missing periods, But what is happening is that you're having some months where you might be making a lot of estrogen, maybe more than you did prior. You're having less progesterone. And again, it's not happening on this predictable schedule. And as a result, everything starts to feel like it's changing. And it feels like, every month is a new month. Every day is a new day. You don't know what to expect anymore. You might start to notice changes in how your body looks, how your body feels. You might start to notice that your sleep and your mood and your ability to cope with stress is changing. You might start to notice changes in appetite and digestion. So it really is a full body experience. Now, it's not awful for everyone. And that's what I always want to kind of reinforce too. Just like puberty and pregnancy, these are normal life stages that your body is, this change is pre-programmed into your DNA. It's not optional. You can't opt out, but it also doesn't mean that it's going to be this awful, terrible experience, especially when you can feel empowered to have the right information ahead of time, which is one of my big missions, is to make sure we're talking about it, just like we would with puberty and pregnancy, is to tell people what to expect. So you're going through perimenopause, you start to notice like, hey, why did I have two periods this month? Or why was my period a week late? Oh my God, am I pregnant? And then all of a sudden you miss one. And or maybe you start to notice that consistently your 28-day cycle is now a 50 or 60-day cycle. That kind of signals that you're entering late perimenopause, which is typically 1 to 3 years. Early perimenopause is more often a little bit on the longer side. And what happens when you're in late perimenopause is that you're now no longer consistently ovulating. And as a result, you're going through periods of much lower estrogen for maybe a few months at a time. And you're going to start experiencing some of those symptoms of that lower estrogen state. You're much more likely to experience hot flashes, night sweats. Maybe some of the symptoms related to mood and sleep and energy and stress are also still there, but maybe have shifted a little bit. And then once you've gone 12 full months without a period, you are considered menopausal. So menopause is one day. Everything before is perimenopause and everything after is postmenopause. So when we're going through all of these changes, and again, that can happen over a decade. Mine was, about 7 years from kind of recognizing perimenopause until my last period, is that this change in hormone soup does change what our bodies look like. And we know that from lots of research, but also I think anybody who's in their 40s or 50s, all they have to do is spend time with someone in their 40s and 50s to hear how common and normal these changes are. So one of the things that happens is what I call a redistribution of assets. And so we go, when we're in this higher estrogen state or this estrogen-based hormone soup that we make, where our body likes to store fat moves from our hips and thighs, from that pear shape or gynoid shape, more to kind of our middle section. And again, this is something that happens to most people. And it doesn't mean that you're doing something wrong, and neither does it mean that you have to do something about it, because this is a change that happens to all of us. If we are better equipped to handle changes in our body, if we have a bit more of a body neutral focus, that our self-worth and self-image aren't defined by what our body looks like, it is so much easier to say, okay, just like there were changes in my body, puberty, pregnancy, and will continue to change as I get older, how can I not let this derail me and take me down that spiral into the diet cycle again? And that's where I think the hardest thing is. Everybody can look around and say, like, hey, yeah, this is happening to all my friends. This is happening. But can I actually learn to make peace with this? That's where I think some of the more challenging conversations are.
For sure. And it's learning to have that self-acceptance now, isn't it? Because you're so right, what you said, it doesn't matter what phase of life you're in, whether you're going through puberty, pregnancy, menopause, that your body is going to be changing as a woman. And it's really interesting because just before, I don't know if you've ever heard, there's this girl, I can't remember her full name, Jess something. I think she writes really, really beautiful poems, and she's gone viral recently on social medias. And she released one half of the poem talking about body image and how, we never remember the girls' bodies at the pools and things like that. And she released the other part today, and I was listening to it just before, and she was saying, by us always striving to be in a smaller body, we are actually missing out on the smaller things in life. Like, we get distracted by it. And it's just the little things, you know, like by constantly researching what you're going to order at the restaurant before you actually get to the restaurant, and really putting all of that focus into wanting to over control the size of your body rather than actually just embracing that as a woman. We do go through these phases. And I think it's interesting that you also highlighted that it's not for everybody, it's not going to be an experience that is terrible or awful or anything like that. And there's definitely a stigma around it. And I think it's the same as we go through puberty and periods as women. There are so many things that maybe aren't normal, but they're so common that they're just accepted as well. And so obviously we do live in a world where diet culture is pushed very heavily onto women. How do you kind of, I guess, help women navigate their way through steering away from the restrictive eating, or if they are having that big pull to want to go back into dieting and they are having really unhelpful body image days, some tips mm-hmm. to help them kind of navigate through that headspace?
Yeah. And I love this question because there's a few different entry points, as I call them. Some people are coming from a lifetime of dieting and restriction. Certainly I would say at least a third of the people that I encounter went to their first Weight Watchers meeting as, you know, a 10, 11 or 12 year old. And so, they have been chasing an ideal for decades. And some of them have never considered that there's an alternative. Some of them are always just looking for the next diet because they believe that it's out there. They've never considered that they haven't failed at dieting, that dieting has failed them, because it doesn't work for most people as a long-term solution or strategy. So for those people, I think that they really need to go through what I call the undieting process. So long before you learn about intuitive eating, long before you start trying to, you know, practice gentle nutrition and joyful movement and all of those things, we need to really examine the beliefs that have kept you there for 3, 4, 5 decades, because those aren't going to change overnight by paying attention to your hunger and fullness cues, right? And that's kind of what everyone wants. Yeah. It's like, okay, let's just jump to that because that sounds great. But we need to understand, like, what are the beliefs that have held you there? We also need to examine what were you hoping would happen when you lost weight? What are you hoping will happen by finding another diet? And what that often uncovers is, I just want to feel okay. I just want to know that I'm doing the best that I can to support my health, because our health does change in midlife. And that's an important piece of this conversation that I think is missed by some of the, you know, kind of the, I'm just going to call them the general non-diet messaging, which is, you know, you don't have to diet. This is true, but food also matters. Nutrition does matter. It can have a huge impact on how you feel in your body today and in 30 years, but it doesn't have to be perfect. And we don't have to make weight loss a proxy for health. So being able to untangle all of that is also more than just reading a book, right? So we need to talk about those things. But assuming that we go through all of that, I think one of the biggest body confidence aha moments for people is when we start to talk about, is it okay to not love your body? And do you have to love your body in order to feel okay in your body? And because we've only ever talked about body image, most of us, as either a positive body image or a healthy body image or a good body image, it's never occurred to people that you cannot like what your body looks like and feel confident in it. If you learn to separate out your body image from your self image, which is the work of body neutrality, to say my body is the least important part about me, or what my body looks like is the least important part about me, you can no longer become attached to those changes and what they mean. So that is, I think, a powerful, difficult, but really empowering concept for people, is really stepping into body neutrality as a way to feel better about their bodies. Thinking about your body less is how you feel better in your body, right? Like you were saying, not reading the menu before you go to a restaurant and worrying the whole time about whether or not you're eating the right thing. That is not how you feel good in your body. You feel good by living it, taking care of it in a way that feels good, achievable, sustainable, and isn't based on an external set of rules.
I love that, because at the end of the day, I think it is unrealistic to expect yourself to love every single part of your body every single day. I mean,
it is, absolutely it is. Because what happens if, you know, awful things happen, like you're in an accident or you're disfigured or, you know, something like that? Those are things that you can't diet your way out of. You know, there will have to be some kind of acceptance process of body changes that I think, again, is really difficult to grasp when you've been chasing that your whole life. And when we're inundated with messages that all you need to do is try harder and find the right plan, right? The belief that we can diet and exercise our way into someone else's body is a huge belief that we need to change.
Absolutely. And so when you're trying to change the way that you view your body and moving into this ground of feeling more neutral towards it, obviously there are always going to be those voices that still pop up, or, you know, that new diet ad pops up on social media that is like a shiny object. How do you kind of, do you have any, I guess, tools that somebody can put in place or ways that they can kind of get these thoughts out, process them to be able to start to shift that way of thinking?
Yeah. So I think probably most of your listeners are familiar with the diet cycle, right? That predictable series of events where you feel the need or prompt to lose weight and you start following a plan and restricting. And then after a period of time, you start to get tired of that and experience cravings, and then you fall off the wagon and then it starts all over again. So when I'm working with people, I show them that cycle, and sometimes it's new to them. Sometimes they know, but they've never seen it laid out. But then I also introduce them to the undiet cycle. And the first step in that is acknowledging that the desire for weight loss will probably never completely go away because of the culture that we live in. So let's not make that the goalpost. Let's make the goalpost changing how you respond to that. So giving people that prompt to press pause and reflect, oh, I thought about starting a diet today. Where did that come from? Oh, okay, well, maybe it's because when I spend time with certain people, or when I am in certain situations, or when certain things are said or things that I see. And I call them trap doors, because the trap doors you can't plan for. You can't like take another route because they are trap doors. They're meant to kind of be sneaky. And so this is going to be being at a lunch with people that you don't know, and all of a sudden everyone's talking about the latest new diet. So your first thought, very humanly and normally, is going to be, ooh, I wonder if I should check that out. But being able to see that as a trapdoor, being able to press pause and being able to play it forward. Okay, what's going to happen if I do this? Okay, I'm going to have to like buy a plan. I'm going to have to download a bunch of lists. I'm going to have to track all my food. Oh, I see where that's going to go. That's going to lead me right back into the diet cycle. So a lot of what I do is just trying to teach people how to respond versus how to stop, because the trapdoors are everywhere.
And at the end of the day, we have no control over what other people say or do, but we have control over how we respond.
Exactly.
I love it. And I think there's this huge misconception around food freedom that as soon as you let go of all of these diets and these rules and these, like this control that you've had for years, that all of a sudden you're going to be so out of control. And it means that you're only going to turn towards foods that you've probably been trying to restrict yourself from for years upon years. And it's just such a huge misconception, because food freedom is actually having control over food. It's about you being informed to be able to make those choices for your body, whatever that looks like on whatever particular day that actually is. And I know that you mentioned earlier that for you, one of the, I guess, goals that you have is to educate people around premenopause, menopause, but also focusing on it like a lot earlier before you even get to that stage. Yeah. How do you kind of navigate that, and what are some of the things that you should be focusing on whilst always still making sure that there's not this restriction or food rules or anything like that in place as well?
Yeah. So on the hormonal side, you know, the first thing is talk to the people in your life. So talk, if your mother is still around, and especially if she went through kind of natural menopause, meaning she didn't have a hysterectomy, you know, that kind of thing, then that can kind of give you a ballpark. So because we know that there is a large genetic component to reproduction, it's not perfect. There are other influences, but for example, I was 44, my mom was 45, and my grandmother was 44.
Oh,
So it
wow.
was a really strong predictor in my family. And so when I realized at 37 that I was in perimenopause, and I mentioned it to my mom, she was like, oh yeah, well, that kind of makes sense. So like our mother, I mean, you're younger than I am, but like, so my generation of 40-year-olds and 50-year-olds, our mothers didn't talk about menopause. It was just something that happened. And so many of them had hysterectomies. Many of them were impacted greatly by the Women's Health Initiative study in 2001, which scared everybody off of hormone therapy. So there was a lot of suffering, but suffering in silence. And so a lot of the people that I talk to will say like, oh yeah, I remember when my mom went through menopause because she was miserable, but she didn't talk about it. But if you have your mother, aunt, grandmother, older sister around, talk to them, ask them about their experience. It might give you an idea of what's coming. But otherwise, really starting to look at your cycle. So if you have a cycle that is, you know, if you're not taking an oral contraceptive, if you don't have an IUD, if you have an ovulatory cycle, monitoring those changes day one to day one can give you lots of insight. I'm a bit of a data geek and I tracked every period from my first postpartum period in January 2011 until my last period in February of 2022. And being able to see that, yeah, my cycle got shorter, then it got longer, then I started skipping them. So watching for cycle changes and just noticing any symptoms that are happening. So if you start to notice things like the few days before your period, you're feeling really hot and sweaty, or if you start to notice that PMS that lasted a day or two now lasts a week, those are all kinds of things to notice. So really just having that kind of relationship with your body where you notice changes, you have some awareness, but you're not hyper-focusing, you're not worrying about those changes so much as just noticing them and having a way to monitor them over time. So when it comes to food and the body changes, one of the first things that social media and influencers will tell you to do is to cut carbs, you know, to intermittent fast, all those kinds of things. We know that those aren't, well, they're not effective, but they're also not helpful when you're going through perimenopause, especially because we need energy to keep our brain functioning. So brain fog is a really common symptom. And guess what? Your brain loves glucose, meaning from any carbohydrate source, your brain can only use glucose. Really, it prefers to use glucose for fuel. So don't make your brain tired and work harder by not eating carbs or only eating 6 hours a day. You know, just trying to, again, undiet the beliefs that we have about food so that we can choose them intentionally, mindfully, intuitively, and include more of the ones that help us to feel good. On the postmenopausal side, this is where the gentle nutrition conversations sometimes take a little bit more center stage. And that's because when we get into postmenopause, we're in this low estrogen state. There are some changes to our risks around heart disease, for example. So we know that cholesterol is going to jump 10 or 15%. In most people because of that change in estrogen. Has nothing to do with what you're eating. It's just going to jump. We know that blood pressure increases over age for everyone. And that we often see a jump around midlife. So having conversations about, okay, how do I add in things like fiber and high fiber foods more intentionally without counting, without measuring, without tracking, but still feeling like I'm choosing this, but I'm not choosing this because I'm trying to move the scale. I'm choosing this because I know that having more fiber at this stage of life is going to help me thrive in midlife and beyond. So those are just some examples.
Yeah. And I love how it's all focusing on addition, right? It's how can you get more fiber in? How can you, you know, get more carbs in for the brain? Like all of these things, there's not one level of, okay, you have to go and cut out X, Y, and Z, or you have to put these really strict rules
Never.
In.
All foods fit. So I have this list of what I call balanced and competent eating guidelines. And one of them is that unless you are allergic or don't like it, anything fits. Like all foods deserve a place on your plate if you enjoy them. We don't have to moralize food. We don't have to restrict. We don't have to have lists of good and bad. We don't have to use stoplight systems. We don't have to have rules in place. We can learn to trust that we know how to feed ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's even just about taking it back to the basics, right? Because the internet, it has so much information out there, and every person I talk to is doing something different. And even when it comes to hormones, right, it's I'm seed cycling, or I'm, you know, whatever it is for that particular, like eating particular foods at particular times of the month. And when I hear people talk about this, I honestly think I do not think I have the brain capacity to fully swap my diet week after week after week, depending on where I'm at in the cycle, right? It's so much effort, and it's exhausting to always be thinking about that as well. And so, as you're saying, it's more about focusing on adding in where you can and creating that balance across everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a really, I think, novel approach for anyone, but especially someone who's coming from a lifetime of dieting. You know, when I meet people in this stage of life, they have often never not been on a diet for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about from age 10 to, you know, mid 50s, they have never not been on a diet. And they don't trust themselves around food. They don't trust themselves to know how much to eat. They don't trust themselves to even keep foods in the house that they're not allowed to have. So there's so much fear built into those relationships that, you know, we really have to recognize that it's not just choosing not to diet. The not dieting might be the easier part, but the learning to eat intuitively isn't always intuitive if that's not a skill that you've had in your toolbox for decades.
That's so true.
We're all born intuitive eaters, but we have to sometimes relearn it.
Well, that's it. When you watch little kids, they ask for food when they're hungry, they stop eating when they're full, you know, so you're so right. But it doesn't mean that we can't not get back to that place where you can be an intuitive eater.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so where does exercise fit into all of this when it comes to premenopause, menopause, postmenopause? Is there an important role that it does play, or does it not impact it too much?
Well, I mean, we know that movement and, you know, joyful movement, moving your body regularly in ways that you enjoy, is definitely one of the health promoting behaviors that people, I think, do benefit from health-wise, but it also helps us to feel better in our bodies. So I describe movement as one of the ways that we can move through having a bad body image day, because it's hard to feel bad about your body when you're doing something you enjoy in it. We can also look at things like, how do we age well? And I always kind of feel like that's maybe not the right language, but we're still trying to figure that out. Like, how do we age positively,
mm-hmm.
with, you know, the right information, and certainly having some focus on moving your body and keeping your muscles, you know, strong, and maybe even intentionally trying to build more muscle is one of the ways that we can support our health. Has nothing to do with the scale, has nothing to do with how we look, but really has everything to do with how our body is going to move through these seasons of life. So focusing on movement as a tool in our toolbox to support how we want to live is, I think, far more accessible than exercising to lose weight.
Yeah, 100%. And it feels so much less like a chore when you're exercising out of pure enjoyment rather than this is going to dramatically change the way my body looks.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you find ways to move your body that you also enjoy. Like, it doesn't, and this is breaking the stigma that exercise has to be a dedicated time slot to go to the gym or to move your body. It could be gardening, going for a walk with your best friend and getting a coffee. Like, it could be literally anything, roller skating, I don't know, going to the skate park, like whatever it is, right? It doesn't have to be this designated gym session time. And that's the exercise. It can be if that's what you love, but it doesn't have to be.
And I often tell people, try matching your mood to your movement. So if you're trying to move more intuitively or joyfully for the first time and trying to get out of like rigid schedules, ask yourself, how do I want to feel at the end of my movement? And that answer will change. You know, you might want to feel energized. You might want to feel relaxed. You might want to feel strong. Maybe you want to feel connected. And so going for a walk is the best movement for you at that time. If we start connecting movement to how we feel instead of how we look, it's a lot easier to have that really flexible relationship with it.
Yeah, I love that 100%. What would you say is probably the top most common myth or misconception that you do hear about menopause?
That it's the beginning of the end. So, you know, we have a lot of societal and internalized ageism around getting older, and menopause is seen as the beginning of the end. And as I like to say, menopause is just the end of your period. It's not the end of you. And if you talk to people who are, you know, in this season of life, I'm one of them who will say, this is the best season that I've been in so far. I wouldn't trade it for anything. And there are so many of us who feel that way because, and I think that when you have done the work around feeling okay with aging, feeling okay with a changing body, not needing to love it, not needing to fight it and get it to look like something you used to love or would love or want to love, but just being able to be and to work on how can I be the most accepting version of myself in this season, knowing that menopause isn't optional, we all go through it, is kind of the biggest myth and advice I would give people, is that it is just the end of your period. It is not the end of you.
I love that. Love that reminder. Now I do have some quick fire questions for you, Jen. Are you ready for these?
Yeah.
The first one is, what is one thing that you must do every morning to set your day up?
Coffee. Coffee is my non-negotiable start to my day.
Perfect. What is one thing everyone can do to improve their life?
I think that self-care is, and recognizing that self-care doesn't mean necessarily doing something, but it means prioritizing yourself at some point in your day. Whether that is stopping to meet a need, whether that is rest, whether that is, you know, doing something for you, but really recognizing that that self-care is non-negotiable.
I love it. And you're right, self-care could look different for everybody. For some people, it could be the hairdressers, a hair face mask, whatever it is. For somebody else, it literally could be taking 5 minutes in the morning to just breathe.
Yeah.
Perfect. What is your favorite quote and why?
One that I really love and use a lot is one by Brené Brown. And it says that midlife is when the universe grabs you by the shoulders and, you know, it says, use your gifts. I'm not messing around, something like that. And I think that for a lot of us, that really resonates because it does feel like it is a bit of a landmark, you know, kind of like, okay, you know, if you have a family, if you have a career, those things are probably established and well on their way to becoming whatever they're becoming. And it often is a first opportunity for us to reflect inwards a little bit. And what do I want the next season of life to look like?
And I love how you're calling it like entering into another season of life as well, which I think is so powerful because as humans, I always say we go through so many different seasons. You kind of almost get to shed your skin like a snake, depending on where you want to go and who you want to evolve into.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so for sure, like actually using it to take that time to reflect inwards and check in with yourself and see what the next part of your life is going to look like.
Yeah.
Huge. Now, one question that I do love to ask all my podcast guests is, in the distant future, when you are looking back at your life, what do you think will be your biggest achievement or something that you'll be most proud of? And it could be something that you've actually already achieved, or it could also be something that you're still hoping to do in the future.
I hope ultimately that I will have changed the narrative and been part of the changing narrative for my kids, most relevantly, but really for all the younger generations, which I guess could include you, around what it means to age. So that's would be my, I would be really proud to be part of that.
For sure. I think that's so powerful. Did you want to tell the audience what you have coming up, if anything exciting for them, and where the listeners can actually go to find you and connect with you?
Yeah. So if any of this resonates with people and they're interested in learning more, the best place to hang out with me is on Instagram at menopause.nutritionist. There's a link in my bio, which will take you to all the things. And I, you know, my passion project is my Midlife Feast community. So this is, you know, a membership community where we're all in the season of life, in some stage of the season of life, and we're all working towards making peace with food and our bodies. So if people are interested in that, they can always follow those links and come find us.
Yeah, perfect. And I'll put all those links in the show notes for easy access for everybody. But thank you so much, Jen, for coming on and sharing everything that you have with us today. I know that there'll be so many women walking away with some golden nuggets. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
What an incredible episode today with Jen. I hope that you got some golden nuggets from our chat. I would absolutely love to connect with you. So just head over to my Instagram, which is KJ Wellness with three S's, and share the one key takeaway that you took from today's episode. As always, I hope that you enjoy the rest of the day or the night whenever you are listening to this episode, and I will chat with you in the next one very soon. Until then, take care. Bye.